on Straight Talk Africa. A state of emergency is underway in Ethiopia. This following the resignation of the chairman of the ruling party, Prime Minister Haile Mariam Desalegn. Could this trigger the beginning of fundamental social and political changes in Ethiopia, the Horn of Africa, and the entire region? That's coming up next right here on Straight Talk Africa. Hello, welcome to Straight Talk Africa, live from the Voice of America studios here in Washington. I am Shaka Sali.
And hello to all of our viewers and listeners on the continent and elsewhere. I'm Heidi Adams-Fitzpatrick, and I'll be following all social things, social media for you.
Today, we are discussing the significance of the state of emergency and the political transition in Ethiopia.
And coming up later, we've seen your comments on our topic in emails, on Facebook and via Twitter, and we're going to reveal some of those comments for you just ahead here on Straight Talk Africa.
Ethiopia is under a six-month state of emergency following the resignation of Prime Minister Haile Mariam Desalegn. Political observers say this has raised the stakes for the Horn of Africa nation, whose stability now hangs in the balance. My colleague Paul Sisko has more.
I spoke with an Ethiopian man this morning where I bought my coffee. He said in his country, it's like it's always been. Just one dictator replacing another. But after I paid, he added, at least the killer is gone.
Amnesty International says the repression comes from government responses to protests, which are driven by social economic grievances, the right to health, the right to education, and the right to speak up. Their report highlights government's efforts to silence protests in Kenya, Togo, Guinea, and Ethiopia by using force and arbitrary arrests. In Ethiopia, arbitrary detention continued under the state of emergency declaration lifted last June. Many of the hundreds imprisoned under the anti-terrorism proclamation, ATP, were held in excess of 6 months. And they faced long delays, unfair trials on charges brought under the law, many complaining of torture and other ill treatment while detained. Last week, the government signaled big changes ahead by freeing several prominent critics, opposition leaders, and their supporters. Some 1,500 political prisoners were released last Thursday. The announcement of another state of emergency came one day after Prime Minister Haile Mariam Desalegn resigned as part of a continued effort to kickstart societal reforms. Ethiopia has also been reeling from deadly protests since 2016, especially in the two most populous regional states of Amhara and Oromia, over alleged political and economic marginalization. Tuesday, Ethiopian authorities ordered its security forces to take all the necessary measures to deal with anti-government agents in the rest of Oromia region. Johnny Carson says the country has to hold better elections.
It has to make sure that all of the country's different regions and different ethnic groups feel totally a part of the country's political governance. That they have an opportunity for their voices and their views to be heard in the national arena. That their areas are going to get the same kinds of development, support, and assistance as other regions. And that their leaders are also going to have an opportunity to hold and occupy senior positions, and that their political parties and others are going to be able to participate actively in the parliament.
U.S. officials in Addis and Washington quickly responded to the newly declared state of emergency with its rights restrictions, saying it is a concern of ours, and the move undermines recent positive steps creating a more inclusive political space in Ethiopia.
The Prime Minister of Ethiopia resigned. It is a sign of democracy, and it is a sign of responsibility. It is a good thing. We don't see it a lot, actually, in Africa and in Horn of Africa. And when we compare it to the other African countries, you can say Ethiopia, it is more democratic country now than before.
Paul Sisko, VOA News, Washington.
Thanks, Paul, for that report. To learn more on the political developments in Ethiopia, we are joined by Solomon Abate, VOA's Horn of Africa reporter. Good afternoon, King Solomon.
Good afternoon, Shaka.
May How are you?
President Shaka.
Well, it must be, I must say, it is a pleasure to have you on Straight Talk Africa for the first time.
Yes, it is my first time. And thank you for inviting me, Shaka.
You're most welcome, sir.
Yeah.
Well, let me first come to you and say, what's the mood like on the ground? Because you must be interacting with a lot of people.
Mm-hmm. You see, Shaka, the video that we just saw, I think, depicts the situation in the country in general. Now the state of emergency is in effect in the country, even though the parliament is expected to endorse it or to discard it the day after tomorrow, on Friday. It is on the recess currently, and it will be gathered for this emergency meeting. And the parliament will also look matters on the nomination of the new prime minister. Today, the situation in the country looks calmer than the other days, but yesterday there were some turbulent situations in some parts of the country, specifically in the western part of Ethiopia. There were some demonstrations in two towns, specifically in Nekemt and Dembidolo. One person was killed, and about a score or more were wounded by gunshots and other means of attack, according to the administrator of Nekemt Hospital, Dr. Desalegn Tadese. So now the state of emergency is in effect, according to the Council of Ministers, and we shall see what will the Parliament come up with the day after tomorrow.
I see. Let me ask you, we heard in the piece, for example, that the government has ordered the security forces to take all necessary measures. What exactly does that mean?
I have a problem of sound. Would you repeat that for me?
What I was saying is that the government has given orders to the security forces to, quote, take all necessary measures, especially in Oromia. What does that exactly mean?
Mm-hmm. Well, this state of emergency was declared, according to the statement from the Council of Ministers. The government was unable to manage things through regular constitutional ways. So it looks like the constitution has been suspended in the country, and it is under the command post, which is ordered by the Minister of Defense, who is also the chief of the command post. So the army takes over, and it takes whatever measures it is licensed to take.
I see.
Including using firearms.
You know as well as I do, of course, that the state of emergency was declared following the resignation of Prime Minister Haile Mariam. Did he, in fact, resign, or was he, in fact, pushed by the TPLF, which dominates the
Yes, that's a good question. That is a good question. A lot of people ask this question. I recently interviewed the Minister of Communications of the country, and he said his decision came not as a surprise, and it was in the making for months that passed during, you know, the EPRDF's 17-day meeting. They discussed the situation in the country, and it looked back into itself. I mean, the party, the ruling party, and it looks like the decision was made for the prime minister from somewhere else, according to some sources close to the Voice of America told us. So it may not be his own decision, and there are some opposition leaders who has been saying, you know, who have been saying that this prime minister was not a real prime minister with real powers in the office. So the decision may have come from somewhere.
So in other words, if I hear you correctly, he was an individual that held the position, had the rank, but did not exercise authority. Is that correct?
That is what the opposition say.
Well, that reminds
for,
me
for,
of
for the time being.
That reminds me of a former Rwandan post-genocide president, Pasteri Bizimungu, who actually had was president, but in fact did not have authority, because the authority was exercised by the vice president, Major General Paul Kagame. Well,
yeah. You know, in Ethiopia, in the current political situation, the EPRDF is usually per, again, opposition parties and other analysts, is dominated by one of the member parties, which is TPLF. And by the way, for as for Ethiopians, as many say, it doesn't matter from which tribe, from which ethnic group the leader comes.
I see.
But but that ruling party, the TPLF, is, you know, a dominant party, you know, within the coalition of EPRDF.
On that note, King Solomon, time is not our best ally. Thank you so much for your insight.
Thank you.
You're most welcome.
Have a good day.
Now, joining us by phone is Professor Burihanu Nega, who is the chairman of Patriotic Guinea Boat 7, an Ethiopian rebel political group. Good evening, Professor Nega.
Good evening, Shaka.
How are you, sir?
Good, good. Thanks for having me.
Oh, you're most welcome. What is what does that name mean?
What? My name?
The Guinea-Port, the Guinea-Port 7.
Guinea-Port 7 is the date of the 2005 election, the day for the first time in the country's history a meaningful democratic election has taken place, which was in fact, in the evening of the election, through a kind of state of emergency, the ruling party, led by the now deceased Meles Zenawi, more or less squashed and arrested tens of thousands of people to circumvent the actual results of the election. So we take it as a symbol of what kind of society that we wish to see in Ethiopia, a free, democratic society. That's why it took that name.
Was that the time when you were allegedly elected prime minister of Ethiopia?
No, I was elected mayor of the capital, and without serving one day, I was sent to prison for close to 2 years.
Mayor of Addis Ababa?
Yes.
How do you react to the events as they unfold in Addis Ababa right now?
Well, I mean, you were talking about this state of emergency, and I think it is a misnomer, to be frank, because it is actually a military takeover. I said that simply because, as your guest just pointed out, this state of emergency was declared the day after the Prime Minister has resigned. You can tell me if there is any country when, after the Prime Minister resigned, he can declare a state of emergency that he is not going to implement because he is out of office. So, I mean, this so-called state of emergency is a forced military takeover, and they are now working very hard trying to pressure, to force the parliamentarians who might actually be against this state of emergency. And from what we are hearing, there are quite a lot of them. And they are now, the security apparatus and the military is going door to door and threatening the parliamentarians to vote on Friday to approve the state of emergency. And this is a state of emergency where the executive branch, which is supposed to be an executive decision, has supposedly called for after it has resigned. How bizarre can it get?
Now, you say supposedly after he had resigned. Do you have any other information to the contrary? Was he, in fact, fired?
No, I really don't think it matters. I think, honestly speaking, I think since Melas Zenawi's departure, the Prime Minister has literally no power, and the power behind him has been the TPLF and the military and security apparatus behind it. But during this period, because of this, the enormous resistance against this regime, not only in Oromia and the Amhara region, but in almost all the regions for the last 3 years, the Prime Minister could not really, handle this because he does not have the power. So the military has twice declared state of emergency before. As I said, the only weird thing is previously they were doing it through him while he was still nominally at least in power. But this time, this guy has resigned because I think he's tired of being, blamed for everything that's happening. And the military wanting to kill and maim hundreds and thousands of people, they just couldn't even handle a cover like a prime minister. They just want to have complete control, and that's what they are trying to do. I don't think they will succeed, but that's what they are trying to do. They want to be in full control. This is a country that supposedly have a constitution, but that have never implemented this constitution. So nobody in Ethiopia is really surprised at this. But the difference is, it is happening at a moment when the Prime Minister himself says, this is, I'm resigning because I want the reform to be continued. They have released prisoners, and everybody was hoping, okay, maybe these people have come to their senses, and they are trying to look for a soft landing. And, when these prisoners were released, most of these political prisoners, they were received like heroes all over the country, and I think that has scared them, and that has made it clear that the public has enough. So I think that's why they were forced to see if they can stop this militarily.
What are the fundamental root causes of the uprisings, especially in Oromia and Amhara regions?
This is Shaka. I mean, people can tell you different things, but this is, there might be specific local questions, local demands, whether it's in Oromia or in Amhara or in the south. But at the center of this issue is people being fed up to be living under tyranny. They want to choose their leaders. They want to have the freedom to speak. They want to have the freedom to organize, to have a chance to go to demonstrations if they want to, without fear that they would be arrested or killed. This has been going on for 27 years. The very existence of the nation is now in serious question because, I mean, the ruling party, as your previous guest was saying, you know, it is dominated by the TPLF, which supposedly represents, of course it doesn't represent them, but claims to represent a very tiny minority in the country, something like 6%, and the only way that they could rule is by dividing the rest of population to be at loggerheads against each other. And even that wouldn't work anymore, because people saw after 27 years that the real problem is TPLF and the regime. The real problem is the regime that refuses to give basic, I'm talking about even by African standards, basic freedoms. So people are saying, you know, enough is enough. We just want to live. This is the 21st century. We want to live in freedom like everybody else. This kind of tyranny is just simply unacceptable. So that signals that people are fed up and they are willing to pay whatever price they have to pay in order to achieve that freedom. And, you know, opposition parties, foreign governments have been telling this government, look, it's better to have a mechanism for soft landing that might even include you as part of this transition to a real democracy. But if you don't, then what is going to happen is people are going to rebel, and this rebellion already is, you know, taking hold of most of the country. And, you know, at the end, there is no amount of military that would stop such a massive movement by people.
Final question.
People are still hoping that they would come to their senses and, you know, lead this to some kind of a soft landing. But they just simply refuse. They just want to continue to rule the way they have ruled in the last 27 years.
Now, Professor, time is not our best ally. If I were to ask you the final question, and I'm asking you to talk to us from the deepest, better part of the bottom of your Ethiopian heart and soul, what would you suggest is the way forward, very briefly?
Oh, we have submitted a very clear proposal for a transition towards a democratic governance that includes all political groups, civil society, even religious institutions, to sit down and talk about what would be the best way for the future of the country and gradually lead it towards democratic dispensation. That is what almost every political organization is asking, save for the TPLF and the army. That's why this thing is... I mean, recently as last week, one of the churches in the country called for such a dialogue, for an open dialogue towards some kind of settlement, but they still think that they can get away with murder and tyranny. But I think that time is over. And I think they are sending the country into chaos. That's what's unfortunate about this.
Well, on that note, Professor Nega, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you very much, Shaka, for having me.
You're most welcome, sir. You're most welcome. Now, joining us here are two distinguished guests. Dr. Johannes Zeleke, Research Associate, Natural History Museum, the Smithsonian Museum in Washington, D.C., and Muhammad Ademo, freelance journalist and founder and editor of opride.com, an independent news website about Ethiopia. Gentlemen, I have to say that I'm profoundly honored and exceedingly humbled to have the opportunity to host the two of you for the first time on Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you for having us.
You're most welcome.
Thank you very much.
You're most welcome. Well, you just heard Professor Nega. You also heard earlier, of course, my colleague Abate. Your reaction, your immediate reaction.
Well, I just came back from Ethiopia about 12 days ago.
Mm-hmm.
And the issue is what I learned. The Ethiopian people are angry. There is anger from board to board, the whole country. They are angry with the government. They are angry with other politician factions, because for the last 27 years, before that, for another 17 years, Ethiopia was a country without any stable situation. Ethiopians were hoping for a better, and things through time gets worse. What we see today is, it's not between the opposition. The opposition doesn't have any power in the country. It's between the ruling party, what's going on.
And what is the ruling party? Are you talking about the ruling party?
The EPRDF. Yeah.
But people say that has no power. Power is in the hands of the TPLF.
Well, that must be right, because the TPLF is the originator of these parties, and they have an upper hand. But through time, they liberalized, and they start to have a common voice. That's why, from the Oromia, from the Amhara, and from the other parties, people are talking about the ruling party itself, members of the ruling party, and against the domination of the TPLF. It has been an open discussion between them. So the Ethiopians are now in dilemma about tomorrow. They're just looking what's going to happen tomorrow, because there is a government, okay? That's no doubt. There was an election, round of elections, with all its deficiencies.
Would you call that an election real?
Yeah, there was an election. There was a contested election.
Election that has been described by American officials as leading to 100% democracy.
No. You see, that's the misunderstanding of elections. EPDRF probably got something like 61%. But because that, the election system allows them to get all the seats, doesn't mean that they represent the whole country, the whole people. Because there could be one candidate in Addis Ababa, he could be elected, and he could get a margin of 3 or 5 votes. And that guy will come to the parliament as the member. Okay. So that's the system.
But I see.
What I'm trying to say is, What is my reaction?
Let me bring in Muhammad. Muhammad, what about your reaction? The last time I checked, someone actually said if there has ever actually been any election in Ethiopian history, it probably was 2005.
Yes. I think that's absolutely right. I think the most important thing here is this party has been in power since 1991. They have had 5 elections in that period of time. The most competitive one...
Would you call them elections or selections?
That's what they call it. But the point I'm trying to make is the most competitive one of those elections has been the 2005 elections. But what they've done, though, is to create fake opposition parties within the ruling coalition, especially in the last election when they won the 100%. So they... when you look at the election sheet, you have 90 different parties competing for the election. But these parties were created for the purpose of creating a semblance of democracy, a semblance of free and competitive elections. But in reality, what has been happening is ballot stuffing and all kinds of vote rigging, which basically means that the results of the outcome of the election was predetermined even before the polls opened.
Very interesting. So what do you think is the way forward, really?
I think the one thing that I think you've covered in your report and your guest was talked about this. Up until now, the problem has been the opposition versus the ruling party. But right now, the big problem that is facing the country is division within the ruling party itself. So in other words, the EPRDF is a coalition of 4 different parties. Those 4 parties are supposedly they represent their ethnic groups within the coalition. But now what we've seen over the last 4 years, since 2014, is this growing demand, mostly from Oromia, for more democratization, for more representation, for government to address historical Oromo grievances about being marginalized to the from the center, and some people would say being treated as second-class citizens. So in response to that, there are members of the ruling party in Oromia, the Oromo People's Democratic Organization, started making changes. And one of the first changes they made was telling the protesters, everything that you've been saying on the street is correct. You have legitimate grievances. You have legitimate demands, ranging from lack of freedom to lack of economic opportunities to basically not having a government that is accountable to the people, because there's so much corruption and elected leaders are benefiting by claiming to represent the people. So by acknowledging the demands, they positioned themselves as reformist elements within the ruling party.
But they have said that they are going to deliver on those demands.
They
can they in fact deliver?
Well, we will have to wait and see. But I think the change that we've seen since January, whether that is the release of the prisoners, the resignation of the prime minister, and some of the things that we've seen prior to the state of emergency, is clearly from the push that is coming from the Opidio.
Well, unfortunately, Muhammad, time is not our best ally. You are tuned into Straight Talk Africa. We'll have more of a discussion in a moment, including our social media segment. So please, don't go away, because we'll be right back with you.
Like Voice of America on Facebook. Follow VOA on Twitter. Join VOA on our YouTube channel. Like, follow, join VOA.
This is Straight Talk Africa on the Voice of America. Call us now with your questions and comments. The number is 202-619-3111 and the U.S. country code is 1. Call us direct and we'll call you right back. Remember to turn down the volume on your radio or television and keep your comments brief. Now back to Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you very much, Esther Githu-Ewart, and of course, welcome back to Straight Talk Africa, live from Washington. It's time to bring in our social media reporter, Heidi Adams-Fitzpatrick. Take it away, Heidi.
Thank you very much, Shaka. We've had quite some buzz on our social media feeds about this topic. Ethiopia primed to undergo a major political change following the unexpected resignation of Prime Minister Haile Mariam Desalegn. As we mentioned, Defense Minister Siraj Fegesa has declared a six-month state of emergency. And so here was our question of the week. What expectations do you have for Ethiopia's future once there is a new prime minister? So let's start with a tweet from Upano Godfrey. The prime minister's election will not stop the future violence from recurring unless the root cause of the problem is sorted. Politics of ethnicity and land questions, the same society will force him out of power. Otherwise, Ethiopia is in the right direction of industrialization. We have another tweet from James Mtumishi. Address the issue of land, very important. Now to our social media comment of the week from Facebook fan Aliu H. Sandy from Sierra Leone, who writes, there should be more political stability, moving the economy toward a sound footing and a change for the better in the country. Let's go to another comment from Facebook fan Luke Lugobe Banabakintu from Uganda, and he writes, a change in the nation's leadership may help to curb the exodus of Ethiopians leaving the country to better themselves. Another Facebook comment here comes from Yomu Darari from Ethiopia. We need a leader who will work on national unity, equal justice, and freedom. Another Facebook comment comes from Muhammad Ahmed Mansour from Liberia, and he says, a dramatic shift in Ethiopian politics is expected. This anticipated change will lead to an alliance with some of Ethiopia's neighbors. Haile Mariam Desalegn's resignation is a bid for durable peace and sustainable economic development. And our last Facebook comment comes from Matthew Ndifreke from Nigeria. Here's what his expectations are: to reunite the people and provide access to a good quality of life and education. Now, a reminder for you that we appreciate all of your feedback. If you are a new fan, do drop us a line at africatv@voanews.com. And to comment on our Facebook page, just enter these keywords, Straight Talk Africa. Be sure to visit us online at voaafrica.com. And to join our YouTube channel, just sign up to VOA TV 2 Africa. Of course, you can follow us on Twitter at VOA Shaka. Straight Talk Africa also streams live every Wednesday on Facebook, or simply go to VOA's Straight Talk Africa TV program page that is on our website. And to watch us live on your mobile device, download the VOA mobile app. Now for a look at what is in store on next week's show.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, Sierra Leoneans go to the polls on March 7th to choose a new president, parliament, and local councils. After his two terms in office, President Ernest Bai Koroma stepped down. His presidency faced challenges of the Ebola virus outbreak and alleged corruption. What are the most pressing issues now facing the West African nation? That's next week, right here on Straight Talk Africa.
And that is where we will leave it for today's social media segment. Shaka, you and the guests have lots to discuss, so I'm going to give it back to you.
Thank you very much, Heidi, for sharing some social media reaction with us. And of course, welcome back. Our topic for today, the state of emergency and the political transition in Ethiopia. And our distinguished guests are Dr. Johannes Zeleke, research associate at the Smithsonian Museum in Washington, D.C., and Mohamed Ademo, a freelance journalist and the founder of and editor of opride.com, an independent news website about Ethiopia. Again, gentlemen, I am profoundly honored and exceedingly humbled to have the opportunity to host the two of you for the first time on Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you.
You're most welcome. Mohammed?
Yes, absolutely.
Opride, does that mean Oromo Pride?
Some people say that, yes.
But it's not what you really mean?
Not necessarily, no.
What do you exactly mean?
Well, you know, we the way we started the website was for many, many years, we were trying to get the Oromo story told. The Oromo, being the majority in that country, they have not necessarily had voice, which is some of the grievances that is feeding into the protest that you see on the street now. So the way we started was to tell the Oromo story, but prior to that, Opride was a business model where we used to sell products, pride products, products where people can buy cultural items, mm-hmm. where they can show their pride in their culture, in their heritage. So over time, sort of, we expanded into business, into journalism, and then we got stuck with it. So
I see.
That's sort of how we got into it.
Yeah. It's very interesting, of course, when you read Ethiopian history, you will find that, yes, you are the single largest ethnic community in Ethiopia, and that historically you have actually been oppressed and marginalized, and yet there are some people who actually claim that the emperor himself, the last emperor of Ethiopia, to some degree was an Oromo, Emperor Haile Selassie. Any truth in that?
I think the most important thing is not the blood or the percentage of blood in person's body, but what that person did for the community, whether or not that person actually represents the community that they come from. So for the most important, the good example in this case is the Opidio itself. The Opidio was created in 1991 by the TPLF, basically for the purpose of crossing into Oromia and ruling Oromia. And for the last 27 years, let's say 26 years, for the past year, they've made some changes and they are on sort of an upward mobility. But for the last 26 years, the Opidio essentially occupied seats in the name of the Oromo, claiming to represent the Oromo, where the Oromo people were killed, maimed, jailed, and pushed into exile by the thousands. So I think a lot of people get caught up on, you know, he was 5% Oromo, he's 10% Oromo. It doesn't matter what percent Oromo you are. What have you done for the Oromo people? I think that's the most important thing we should ask. And you know, whether or not the Oromo people put you in that position to represent them, or whether you are in that position for your own benefit or for the benefit of people who put you in that position.
Very interesting. But for the benefit of our audience, is there any truth in the allegation that Emperor Haile Selassie was, in fact, an Oromo?
Look, I have not done the DNA, and I don't think anyone has. People claim he's Oromo, he's this and that, when for political reasons. So identity in Ethiopia context is used for political reasons. It's highly politicized. So I think people make these claims. Usually, these leaders, even, say, for example, the dictator Mengistu Haile Mariam, some people say he's an Oromo. But these claims usually emerge after these leaders leave power, and then now when Oromos have become more assertive in Ethiopian politics, and not necessarily when the person was in power. Because when these leaders are in power, being Oromo was suppressed. The Oromo language was not even used in public. The doctor here is much older than I am. He can speak to the fact that Oromo language was actually banned, some people would say banned, from public use in media under the emperor, Haile Selassie himself. So if he was an Oromo, you can make the argument that unless he helps himself, he would not go to the extent that this language and culture would be banned from public display. So I think identity was used for political reasons in Ethiopia again, and usually when people leave power, they become Oromo.
There are some, of course, people who have done that. You have Adolf Ekman, who happened to be Jewish, and of course, you know the role he played in the Holocaust.
Yes.
The Second World War. Well, let's go to the lifeline of the show, and those are the telephone callers. Good afternoon, Tedla in New York. You're most welcome to Straight Talk Africa.
Yes, good afternoon. I mean, the discussion finally deteriorated into Oromos versus this and Haile Selassie. Let me tell you, Shaka, in 1896, I don't know how many years, 100-something years, Oromos, Amharas, Urages, we all went together and defeated Italy at the Battle of Adowa. That was an Ethiopian pride. We Ethiopians lost that pride, and now we are now dividing and splitting on the tribal land. Someone says Oromo pride, someone says this pride. Let me be honest with you. Africa is responsible for Ethiopia. If Ethiopia is deteriorated into chaos, Africa Union is in trouble. So for me, we are now under military control, period. So the world has to know that Ethiopia is going in the dangerous trajectory, and that is not good for everybody. African Union, they have to wake up. We are in trouble. The questioning about former kings and former dissatisfaction, that has nothing to do with what is going on. Let me tell you, Shaka, not now. The so-called OPDO now, who's the gentleman over there telling me some of them are reformists, at the beginning, when the 1991, when they got to power, the Amharas were the first victims of ethnic cleansing. We don't go back and now say that you guys are responsible for that. We want to bring the young generation into the table. The young generation are saying throughout Ethiopia, we need change. We cannot survive in our country. We don't want to go and die across the desert. Please give us our time and let us build this country. Tribalism is a disease, Shaka, you know that. If Africans, we go on a tribal trajectory, the whole of Africa is going to explode. That is a dangerous thing. We defeated this thing.
I'm afraid your point is really well made. Thank you so much. What about Anthony in Delaware? Good afternoon, Anthony.
I would just like to say good afternoon to all of my... I would like to say good afternoon to all of my brothers and my sisters around the world. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you, except that your brothers and sisters back in Ethiopia will probably be enjoying an evening, not an afternoon.
Yes, and my heart goes out for each and every brother and sister around the world. But what I want to say is there is much injustice going on around the world against our people. But we must remember that God is watching everything. And as we turn our faces to God and ask for God's help, God will help us, as he has done many times before with Prophet Moses and all his people down through the years. We cannot expect change.
I'm afraid.
As we put God first, God will make a difference. And one day, once again, we will be on top and things will be different and not like they are today. So please, wherever you are around the world today, do not give up hope, but begin to believe that God is on our side and he is going to bring down all the evil in this world against the people that are good and the people that are right, and we will have a fair society again. That's my prayer today. And I believe with all of my heart that nothing is impossible with God.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, brother.
Thank you. Well, let me come to you, Dr. Yohannes. We're talking about the EPRDF being the ruling party, being in charge of the affairs of Ethiopia. What about some, frankly, who say that is merely a facade, really? That power belongs to the Tigrayan, Tigrayan liberation People's Liberation Front, the Guinean People's Liberation Front, and especially the military, the security forces.
All right. But let me just clarify a few things for my brother. I know what you said, but pretty much let me tell you this. Ethiopia was built by the Oromos, by the Amaras, by the Gambellas, by every Ethiopian ethnic group. Ethiopia has been the center of power for the last 3,000 years. That's why it's an attraction for all powers around the world, even today. So Ethiopianism is an identity of Oromo. For the last 700, 800 years, who was not an Oromo, who was part of the ruling party, ruling Ethiopia, ruling this, ruling that. There are Oromos all the time. When he asked you, the emperor, it's not a matter of DNA. And I grew up in that country. I never heard that, and I never know that, and I never read that. Romania was restricted to speak. It's not true. But the country was new, okay? Post-World War I. It was new. The emperor himself was in barefoot when he started that country. And all these Oromos, all these Amharas, all these Tigres, all these Gambellas, they built a new country. They fought 2 wars.
They all defeated the Italians in 1896
at Adwa. Not only that, the main patriots of Ethiopia of the Italian occupation of 1935 to 1941 were Oromos, the greatest fighters.
Were they the commanders?
They were the commanders. They were the ruling parties. They were there. So we don't have to go to that kind of fiction. We have to make that there was injustice in Ethiopia everywhere. There were poor Amharas, there were poor Oromos, but the country for the last 3,000 years was in war. We had 3,000 years, and we crushed every time our history. We crushed Aksum, we crushed Lalibela, we crushed Gondar, we crushed Mekelle, and now we are in Addis.
Is that from your archaeological evidence?
From every evidence I have, yes, absolutely.
Let me point out, by the way, let me point out, for the benefit of the audience, we invited Ethiopian officials to participate in today's program. And the number two man, the deputy chief of the Ethiopian mission to the USA, recommended you very, very highly. Mm-hmm. He said that he has talked to Dr. Yohannes Zereke, that he comes very, very highly recommended. You are the kind of person who says things that they don't find problems with.
No, I'm very critical of the government. I'm very critical of the Haile Selassie government.
But at least they feel comfortable with your criticism, correct?
Absolutely.
Why?
I'm always straightforward. I've been in other opposition media, and I'm telling history. You know, history cannot be rewritten again and again and again.
But let me ask you again the question that I asked earlier.
Yeah.
We know, for example, that at least on paper, the EPRDF,
yeah,
the Ethiopian People's Revolutionary Democratic Front,
yeah,
is the ruling party.
That's what it is.
But what about some who actually say, on the contrary, power, in fact, belongs to the Tigrayan People's Liberation Front, mm-hmm, especially the security forces, the military.
Let me say this.
We have right now, all right, a state of emergency.
We're going to address that in proper way. One, Ethiopia was engaged for 17 years in a civil war, and there was an opening, and these groups, they came and hold power, and they brought with them a group of Oromos, a group of Amharas, a group of this, a group of that, as he said, and they formed a government. But the key component of that was the TPLF. That's true.
Was or still is?
Probably still is, as a shadow government. But the point is,
what do you mean as a shadow government?
As a shadow government means there is two kinds of structure when you say government. One, governors shouldn't be governed by parties, okay? The party representatives, once they send their elected officials, they form a government. That's how it should be.
Mm.
But here, the party is leading the government.
These guys actually exercise real power.
Yeah, the party is leading.
Where is Bereket Simon, by the way? I used to interview Bereket Simon very much.
You better call him. I can't talk to him right now. But there is the party.
The Wayane. They call it Wayane in Ethiopia.
Yeah, Wayane, yeah.
What does it mean, actually?
Wayane means that's the PLF. That's the meaning.
Those are the guys with power, real power.
There is no doubt about it, because it is a transition. But in between, in the process...
A transition?
Yeah.
A 27-year transition?
Oh, hold on a second.
Is there such a thing as a permanent transition?
No. You just don't misquote me.
No, I'm not quoting you. I'm asking you.
Just focus on your question right now. The TPLF formed different branches of its own other Ethiopian groups, and they formed a government. Is that a government which I like? Not at all. But there was a vacuum of power when Mengistu left the country, okay? And in that vacuum of power, they come, then they have a transitional government, then they formed a government, and they wrote a constitution, and they are elected with all ways. And within that, they have in their party all this. But now, what's going on? Within this circumstance, there starts a division in the Oromia, in the Amhara, and so on and so on. That is within the party. What I said is there is no, in Ethiopia now, opposition versus the government. There is an opposition within the government. They are these guys who created them, probably.
What about the uprising of the people, the young people in Ethiopia?
Let me tell you that. That's a good one. That's what I said at the beginning. The Ethiopian people are angry.
Well, unfortunately, we have to bring in Muhammad
The Ethiopian people are angry, I said. They are angry.
Yes, I heard you say that.
They are dissatisfied. That dissatisfaction lead to the condition to now what we see as an emergency. Really, the emergency was important. Let me answer you that question.
Yeah, but the time is not really, it's not our best ally. I have to bring in Muhammad, is also a panelist.
All right.
Shaka, I think you took this conversation off the rails by bringing Haile Selassie, but I have to respond to that point, not to really get Ethiopian history that has been debated endlessly for the last 50 years. But the point here is, it's very offensive to me and to very many Oromos and other groups in Ethiopia to say that the Oromo narrative, the narrative of other ethnic groups in Ethiopia, is a fiction. Mm. That's very offensive. And not everybody agrees with the myth that Ethiopia is a united country where the Oromos and everybody had a say in government in how the country should be governed. For the purpose of, to make it very simply, to put it very simply, for the very long time, until 1991, when the current government came to power, the king was Amhara, the state was Amhara, the language was Amhara, the culture was Amhara. So the Amhara identity was superimposed on the rest of the country. The ethnic federalism that put the current government in power was actually forged as a compromise to address those historical grievances, where history was written by court historians to degrade and to insult the rest of the people in the country. Again, I don't want to relitigate that, but I just want that to be very clear for your viewers, because not only is the language of the minority group oppressed, but in Ethiopia, people like you, people who look like you, are called by names that are insulting, the way African Americans are called by insulting names in this country.
That is the
tragedy of Ethiopian history.
People like Dr. Yohannes refuse to validate
a history of the overwhelming majority of the country at the expense of a myth that was created by court.
It reminds me of when I was an undergraduate student in New York, we were doing comparative politics.
Yes, sir.
And in that comparative politics, they talked about how, for example, even though Addis Ababa was the de facto capital of Africa, because obviously of being the headquarters of the OAU at that time, that there used to be a time when Ethiopians leaving Addis Ababa Airport going to Nairobi, they would actually be saying, we are actually flying to Africa. Just in the same way, so, Egyptians used to say the same thing, and Libyans used to say, we are going to Africa if they were going to Kampala.
You see, this is the ignorance of the century.
No, you see, it's people, they created... It's an Ethiopian version of white racism.
No. Come on. You see, you are a young man, and you are a proud Ethiopian. I'm sure if you are an Ethiopian, you know, the political elites, for their political promotion, they created all kinds of fictions. I know it. I am supporting, I've been vocal for the Oromos, for the Tigris, for everyone who has no injustice in my life.
The Queen of Sheba?
No, hold on.
How does the Queen of Sheba come?
The Queen of Sheba is history. We do have...
Reflecting what?
No. We excavate sites. We don't have an absolute evidence. But there was once upon a time the Queen of Sheba in the Aksumite Empire of Ethiopia, who was the Queen of Ethiopia. She went to Solomon, she did this, she did that. But this was contested during the Ethiopian Revolution 43 years ago. But history is not simply something we tell. It has some fictions, some free tales, it has some. That's not the point. The point is Ethiopians have sacrificed their life, whether Oromos, whether Amaras, every. There is no a single Ethiopian who has no Oromo blood, nor other blood. So the ignorance of the century,
unfortunately,
when the school started, the ignorance of the century, when Addis Ababa University started, the new elites created all these kind of fictions, and they talk about Ethiopian. I'm a proud of Oromo, I'm a proud Ethiopian, I'm a proud Gambella, I'm proud of that.
As a matter of fact, the first time I visited Addis Ababa, I was told that I was Oromo. If I were Ethiopian, I would be Oromo, and I said I would be a very proud Oromo guy.
Yeah, tall.
Very interesting.
Physically beautiful. Well, that's what they say to you.
Unfortunately, time happens not to be your best ally, and on that note, before we go, we would be remiss if we did not remember America's pastor, the Reverend Billy Graham. He was a friend, confidant and advisor to presidents, world leaders, and religious leaders of all faiths. His Christian ministry began in 1947. He conducted hundreds of crusades in 185 different countries and territories on six continents. Graham died February 21st at his home in North Carolina. He was 99. We send our sincere condolences to his family and friends, and the millions touched by his ministry. May his eternal soul rest in everlasting peace. On that note, thanks to my distinguished guests, Dr. Johannes Zeleke and Mohamed Ademo. Thanks to our affiliate stations, along with our viewers and listeners, for many of our Voice of America radio affiliates, Learning English is coming up next. And tomorrow morning is Daybreak Africa with James Bate. On behalf of the Voice of America, thanks for tuning into Straight Talk Africa. In the meantime, get better, not beta, Ethiopia. And please remember to keep the African hope alive. Thank you.